We're joined by the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants. That's Ron Wotus. Well, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Marty. I'm well.
Yeah, I was thinking last night, we both get here early. And I left last night about 11:45, and there's a big piles of garbage, right, in these white bags, as you walk outside. And I came back this morning, they're gone. And they got a Zamboni machine coming down the hallway here, cleaning everything up. It's incredible to me that you could leave at 11:45 on Saturday night, come back at 7:30 on Sunday morning, and the place looks immaculate.
Yeah.
Isn't
well, it's a quick turnover. I mean, there is a lot of garbage. There's a lot going on here at the ballpark, as you always describe, in the morning. But after the game, it's got to be a big mess. And, I bet you the Seagulls wanted a piece of those bags in the back. But, the workers work hard here. I see the ushers when I come in early. The ushers, the people that work at the ballpark, love saying hello to them. They work hard. They love the team. And it's a busy place in the morning.
Yeah, Alice's Restaurant. Remember the song with the garbage? And they took it, they dumped it. And, of course, a great folk song by Arlo Guthrie. But they had a lot of garbage. It's gone. And I don't know where they did it, and I hope they dumped it in the right spot. Let's put it that way.
I'm glad it's gone.
Yes. All right. Hey, the Phillies not so bad. They played well early in the year. They've been on a little bit of a losing thing, but they can pitch. And the kids last night at the end of the game, those right-handers come in and they can do some damage.
Yeah. They have some good starters that really has carried the load for them.
You're getting heckled here, by the way. Yeah.
Here's Gardy. How you doing, Gardy? Yeah, he's going to go in and listen right now. He's in a hurry to go in and put his headphones on. But, they have some really good starting pitching. That's really carried the load for them. And when you can pitch and then close out the game, a couple relievers at the end of the game, when they have a lead, they've been pretty good at holding on to it. And then you put that together with a lot of young guys that play hard. They have speed where they try to create. And, right now their defense has been a little sloppier. Yeah. They're not hitting as much, and their pitchers haven't quite been the same. And, it's a long season. A lot of these guys are young. But if you're going to be undermanned, they have the right model. Good starting pitching. Closers, guys at the end of the game that can help you win the games you're supposed to win, and then try to create some offense with some speed and hitting and running and being aggressive. And, they're in a rough patch right now, but they have some talent.
Yeah, they do. And anytime you get in a close game at the end, you never know what can happen with these hard-throwing right-handers. So we'll see where it goes. Hey, you survived the trip to Tampa Bay, and then the rings. I don't know how you explain those ground rules up there. I tried to figure it out. And then on to Pittsburgh and the shifts and Clint Hurdle and all that stuff in Pittsburgh, which has been a tough place for the Giants to play, but the road trip went well. It really did. The games were not simple, but you won them.
Yeah, we played good ball. I think, as you said, anytime you go on AstroTurf in today's game, it's a little different for the guys. A lot of these guys haven't played on AstroTurf before, or very much. I shouldn't say a lot of them. Some of them, some of the young guys. It's a different experience for them. But we got through Tampa Bay, and that turf is much nicer than the turf they have up in Toronto, where we've had problems in the past. Pittsburgh's always tough. We caught them at the right time. They're a team that's they're reeling a little bit right now. Their starting pitching has not kept them in games, and they just weren't the same as we've seen them the last couple of years. But regardless of those things, going on the road, look at the Dodgers just lost two in Pittsburgh. They're a very, very good team. They'll turn that stuff around. But we caught them at the right time. We had a great road trip.
Did they shift a lot? Remember I told you before you went out there, their theory was to bring the outfield in to cut off singles, and because balls don't go over their head, and then McCutchen didn't like that.
Right.
And then, of course, they shift like crazy. Are they still doing that?
Yeah, they still do quite a bit of it, but they didn't do as much with us as they've done in the past. And I did not see the outfielders playing, overly close on a lot of plays. They seem to look more normal. But I have to say, when you watch your team play another team and you watch them position against you and you see the balls hit, it. They do a good job with it. I bet you their ground ball out percentages and their positioning is near the top in the league. I really think they scrutinize that. They try to get an advantage. I think they're up there in double plays. And I do, watching them, I say, you know what? They do a good job defending our club and most clubs in the league.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're throwing another rookie tonight. They brought up Kuhl, K-U-H-L. Glasnow is coming next. Taillon is up here. Garrett Cole's coming back. And, you know, they're bringing up the young, hard-throwing pitchers because they face Kershaw tonight, who's 14-1 in his five starts as a Dodger, at least in games one. So, interesting, but you still have a seven-game lead here. You're not even at the halfway point, and you know how things work out. There have been times, I think a few years ago, 9.5 on the Dodgers, and then things changed. But how do you feel now? We're not even at the halfway point, and this team is 20 games over 500.
Yeah, well, you have to be really pleased with the way we've played. You know, losing Hunter Pence, you know, we're a little bit in transition with the bullpen there for a little bit. But we're settling in, and somebody says it on the radio all the time. I think it's you that when you get to the halfway point, you know what you have, or a third of the season. And we've certainly played our best ball this last month. So we feel good about where we're at. We're excited to get people back in the Duffys and in the Pence, hopefully Romo. So we need them back. There's a lot of baseball left. And, you know, anything is possible. We've had a very good run without some of our big guns. And it's hard to maintain that. You know, the law of averages in this game will just catch up with you. And so a lot of baseball left. We're looking forward to getting our people back.
Yeah, a lot of baseball left. You know, you're not even at the halfway point yet. But you got a shot to get over 50 wins at the halfway point, which certainly is an accomplishment. Ron Woda is with us, the bench coach. I guess I'm sort of fascinated, like the rest of the country, with the Cubs and with Joe Maddon. And, you know, a couple of things he did in spring training. You know, he always did something before workouts, and you run spring training for the Giants, and he wants to keep the thing loose. No rules. We're going to talk about this. No rules. But he brought in bear cubs for the guys to play with. Bear cubs, right? And I said, well, how many teams could do that? Not many can do that. And the Tigers could. I guess they could bring in a tiger cub. But what are you going to bring in? A cardinal? An Oriole? You know, what are you bringing in here? You know, that's about the only thing that you're talking about. You bring in a little pirate? You bring in a giant minute ball? You know. But he does. He pulls his stuff off. And then on the road trips, they wear outfits. And they showed pictures of it. He's trying to keep his team loose.
Right.
It's a young team. And he's trying to relate to him. But, you know, wearing pajamas on the road, wearing suits from the 70s and all that. Can you imagine you doing that or the Giants doing that?
Well, it's hard to imagine. I think that, you know, what he does, he's been very, very successful at it. And I do know this. The guys like to have fun. They like to keep it loose. And everybody does perform better in a loose atmosphere. When you feel you're pressured or you have to perform or everybody's uptight, it makes it much more difficult to play the game. You know, you have to be focused and disciplined and when you need to be, but there's so much dead time in baseball that making it fun, making it light is a lot better for the guys. Now, I remember years ago when I was in AAA and I was near the end of my career, I made notes if I got into coaching and it wasn't so much planning for coaching. It was just, I don't know, I kept a journal on the pitchers, and I remember writing down, you know, rules are not important. Not too many rules. It's between the lines that counts. How you play the game between the lines. And I'm sure that's where Joe is a little more demanding on how they execute and how they play between the lines. So the other stuff, how do you bring the team together? Yeah. How do you make it fun? Yeah. And he does a great job with it. But back to your original question, could I see me in pajamas on the road? Absolutely not.
Now, Billy Hayes, I don't see it.
Billy would look good in pajamas. Him and Gardy. Slippers, you know, some slippers would be great on the long flights we have. It'd probably be really, really nice. And he does do a lot of neat things over there. Like you said, get a chance to see the Cubs, and I've seen him with the big snakes. A lot of those things are a lot of fun. I mean, the guys would enjoy seeing those things. But every trip to be dressing up, I think that would wear on me a little bit.
Okay. All right. You don't pack your pajamas.
No.
All right. Ron Wode is the bench coach here. Let's go to the professor here at Sunday morning. And, you know, you're actually known as the professor now. People actually come up to me.
Well, I know that's a fact because when I walk through these halls, the ushers, they love calling me the professor. So I get it quite a bit, Marty.
Murph, as I left last night, a quarter to 12, Murph goes, "The professor, 9 o'clock tomorrow." You know how
it
goes.
Yeah, well, I have you to blame for this.
Well, you're good. You're good at it. We learned baseball from you. Last night, Tyler Goodell is a nice player. He's from the local kid here and played left and right field and made a nice catch on the sinking liner that Crawford, I think he thought that was in, and he was upset when it didn't drop. But panic got caught. And how is that supposed to be run? You're down by a run. There's one out, first and second.
Yeah. It's a tough ball. I mean, it really is because of where you're at in the game, low-scoring game. It's one of those plays in baseball. It's very easy to say that you have to let that ball drop. I mean, that's after the fact, playing it safe. But you know, you're fighting to get a good secondary. You want to score on a hit. And when that ball was hit off the bat, he knew where the outfielder was. He saw the trajectory of the ball. He felt he was in, and the guy made a tremendous catch. Yeah. So it's very difficult to fault Joe for going on that. As I said, you could say, oh, you got to make it drop. But then you just get the third. He's trying to tie the game late in the game. And there's certain balls that you take a chance on like that. And honestly, I thought it was a great play by the outfielder. When it was hit, I thought it was in there as well. Yeah. So I thought Joe was doing everything he could to score.
Yeah, he went first to third on a little bouncer.
Yes.
How about that one in
yes.
the hole? And Goodell also made a great throw. The shortstop cut it off. I thought maybe he had a shot at Panic, but Panic forced the issue.
Well, he did, and that's the other side of it. Joe's a good base runner. You know, he doesn't have blazing speed, but, you know, he knows how important it is to get jumps at second base like he tried doing on that line drive, going first to third. If you watched him from the beginning, as soon as that ball was hit, he knew exactly where the right fielder was. He put his head down. There was no hesitation. He didn't look to the third base coach. He knew he was going to get the third base because the situation in the game dictated. I think there was one out and he knew where he was playing, the way the ball was hit, that he could get there. And that's what you want to see from your guys. You want to see them taking advantage of the moment when the situation is right, using good judgment when you have to do it. And Joe Bate runs the bases like that.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good analysis of that one. I thought Blanco had a heck of a throw to third base last night. Now, of course, there's a good angle because he's down by the bullpen when Tommy Joseph, who you know, had the double. And that was another key moment of keeping him off third base. Now, he eventually scored when the ball went past Bumgarner on the base hit.
Right.
But I thought Blanco made a heck of a throw on that play.
Yeah, he did. You know, what's it, Franco, how do you say his name?
Franco,
yeah. That ball was hit. You know, he's more of a pull hitter. And there was a man on second with nobody out. It looked like he was trying to go that way. And Blanco was playing a little more straight up to the gap. He got over to the line, turned, and threw and kept them from it. That was big. As you're saying, I mean, he did eventually score, but when he held him there and the guy did not go, you know, it was a sigh of relief for us because when the ball was hit, you say, no, he's at third base with less than two outs. Nice play, good throw. And, you know, they know the other thing that stops him, Juan Samuel, the third base coach, another thing that'll stop these guys, just not the outfielder's arm, but they know Crawford's getting the ball in his hand. Mm-hmm. And if Crawford gets the ball in his hand, you got a good chance of being out as well.
Very good point. That's a good professorial point on this Sunday morning. Very good. The other one I liked was there's a runner on third and there's a fly ball to center, and Span, who's, you know, doesn't have the great arm, what he did was he got rid of the ball quickly and accurately, and he got belt about chest high and kept the guy at third who would never scored. That guy stayed at third. And Span could have, you know, bounced it in on six bounces and you had trouble, but I thought that was a huge play.
Yeah, it was. You know, you talk about the baseball game. Remember, a 3-2 game, and you talk about you didn't get a hit or you didn't make a play. But look how important the base running is in this thing.
Yes.
You know, and executing on defense. But the base running, you're right. There's another ball that a lot of third base coaches would have tried to send them. But to your point, Span got rid of the ball quick. And he's throwing the ball really, really well. I think that was one of the better throws I've seen him make this year. I mean, he's got great carry on his ball. You know, in the spring, we were adjusting a little bit because his arm wasn't doing that good. It took him a while to get where he needs to be. But the way he's throwing the ball now compared to spring training, it is night and day.
Yeah.
And he uncorked a great throw. And, was, of course, there's nobody out. And they don't want to force the issue there. Again, you know, we put Crawford in a relay position there. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yep.
He goes out in front of Belt in case it's a lower throw that's not going to make it. He'll relay it home, and then you have Belt behind him. It's kind of the, we call it the bonsai relay. we've used it with Dave Roberts years ago when he was in left field, and we worked on it in spring training a little bit. But the way Denard's throwing the ball, we don't need it right now. He's doing a great job.
Yeah, I remember Johnny Damon, what impressed me about him is he got the ball and it was gone.
Right.
And Mark Kotze was another guy. He would throw arrows to the bases, how quickly he got rid of the ball.
Right. And that's important. You know, guys are different. Guys with the big, strong arms sometimes take a little bit longer, but they take so long that they make it up with the throw.
Yeah.
If you don't have that powerful of an arm, you know, it's great to get rid of it, get it to the relay man, and two quick throws. And that's what the Japanese do. You know, they focus a lot on their game over there on getting rid of it. It's not so, and they'll have two or three relay guys sometimes.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, they'll be boom, boom, boom. It's fun to watch. It's a lot different than the American, the game with the guy catching it, winding up, and using his arm. So getting rid of it is important.
A couple of icons. Rod Wotus with us, the bench coach, on this Sunday morning. Beautiful day if you're coming out to the park today. A couple of icons. Of course, we saw David Ortiz. We saw him. But Ryan Howard. And you guys have matched up against Ryan Howard. Look, he's taken his team to the World Series. Kind of the end of the road for him. I imagine this could be, he may want to keep playing, but who knows. Your thoughts about Ryan Howard and what he meant to the Phillies, and just looking at him today, and just some thoughts about him. This may be, no one's making a big deal about it, but who knows? This could be the end for him.
Well, you're right. You know, we've blocked horns with the Phillies a lot of years, and when they had him and Utley, and, you know, Pat Burrell was over there, the whole crew. They were an outstanding team for a lot of time. Pedro Feliz, our old third baseman, was in the run of, in
That's
the thick
right.
of it there when they were winning the World Series, and had those great teams, but he was really the cornerstone for them. I mean, he brought the long ball to Philly. The way he performed, he was one of the few guys in the league that you would shift on, dead pull hitter with tremendous power. And he's had a great career. So I'm sure the Philly fans are going to be sad to see him go. Great player for Philadelphia. And as you said, I think that you know, the end is drawing near. He had that Achilles rupture, and he came back from that, which is impressive, because that's not easy to come back from, you know, with a big guy like that and having that Achilles. But enjoyed watching him play. As a matter of fact, I didn't want to see him at the plate. You know, when we played them, you never wanted him to come up, because he hit the long ball as good as anybody.
And the Philly fans are notorious, right? They boo, right?
They booed Santa Claus, so they're going to boo. They'll boo anybody else.
But they're not on this guy's back. They sort of respect what he did, and they respect where he is as a player now. I like that.
I do, too. That's great to see. That's a real baseball fan. You know, he's had good years for him. They know he's a little bit older, and they appreciate what he's brought to the table. That's great to see.
Yeah, maybe we'll see him today. I don't know, against Cueto. I haven't looked. Let's see what his numbers are, if I can find that quickly. Ryan Howard against Cueto, 4-for-21 with a homer.
Right.
So maybe we'll see him again.
Maybe
we'll see him today. Albert Pujols. He passed Killebrew. Next up, Mark McGwire, then Frank Robinson. 573-74 home runs, and this is another guy.
Yeah.
Albert Pujols, and he is a Hall of Famer. Well, what about going against this guy?
Yeah.
Is he still putting it up there?
Same thing. You know, the biggest difference probably between him and Ryan is, you know, there's a lot of similarities. You know, St. Louis was always good. You knew you had to go through St. Louis when you got in the playoffs. They were going to be tough, and they had the big first baseman in Pujols, but probably the biggest difference was this guy was a good hitter. I mean, and not that Ryan wasn't, but Ryan was more of a strikeout, you know, all-or-nothing type hitter. Pujols was a quality hitter. He could hit the long ball and show tremendous power. You could tell by all the home runs he has, obviously. But if he needed a base hit, he'd take the base hit the other way.
Yeah.
Just a tougher out in the game. So another guy that's had a tremendous career.
Yeah, another one. We got an author coming on this morning, 10:30. Did a book about Dick Allen, Richie Allen. This was a powerful hitter. Had also a lot of controversies with the fans, with the front office. There was some racial issues going on in the 60s with him. Remember anything about Richie Allen as a hitter, or were you too young?
Yeah, I was too young. I remember hearing about all the stuff that you're talking about, but I never did see him play. Just the things that you hear and about him and see an old clip here or there. But no, I that's a good thing. I guess I was too young.
Yeah, I doubt it, but you're probably not saying anything. Willie McCovey said he used like a 40-ounce bat. And just he was a good hitter. He could hit anywhere. But he had this contentious relationship with Philadelphia, and the fans boo him. And he wrote Boo, B-O-O, at first base when he went out to field his position. It's like LeMaster who did it on his shirt and all that.
Right. Well, you know, he had a voice, right?
Yes, he did.
And he used it.
Well, he wanted to be compensated, and that was an issue of Philadelphia. There are a lot of racial issues going on at that time, still going on, of course, in the world. But that was one of the things, and he got into it, and Philadelphia was one of the last teams to integrate, and he was Rookie of the Year in 64 and wanted a raise, and they turned the fans against him and sided with the billionaires against this poor guy who was the Rookie of the Year.
Wow.
So that was interesting. It's a good book.
I'll have to look for
it's
that.
It's a lot of fun. All right. Well, we'll take a break. I did a show with Trevor Brown yesterday talking about everything that he does coming to the ballpark. And I did this panel discussion with Benji Molina was on, which was fascinating to me, of all the work catchers do.
Yeah.
But with the catcher is the professor. You know, I want to know what time you get to the ballpark, because you got to set these defenses and a million things that you got to do. So we'll take a break, and we want to hear your routine when you get to the park. Now, Mark Gardner's probably laughing right now and saying, well, he's drinking coffee and eating and all that. But you do a lot of things. We'll find out about it right after this.
Talking baseball with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680, the sports leader.
All right, we'll be out at the public house at about 10:15 today, seeing Pecan out there, Patrick. We've got a lot of things going on out there today. Well, you get to the ballpark. What's life like for you when you get to the ballpark? You know, what goes on with you?
Well, I think for all of us, you know, the big thing in today's game for all coaches is there's so much information and video available to you that it gets pretty time consuming. You have to come in early and you have to look at it, you know. Your instincts come into play during the game. So, you know, I get here usually by 1 o'clock, sometimes earlier, sometimes later for a 7:15 game like most people do. And, you know, and you start grinding away at the information. You look at that. You look at the video. You look at the spray charts. You look at all that stuff, and you come up with a defensive plan. I spend a lot of time doing that. I think that probably takes the majority of my time. And then you got to relay everything to the players,
right,
which it is another time-consuming thing. And, you know, the way I like to do it is I like to do it individually. A lot of clubs do have a team meeting. The team gets together and, you know, the pitching coach is going to go over how we're going to pitch these guys and everybody's listening. Then you talk about how we're going to defend them. But you get a group together like that and in one ear out the other. So I do it individually. I'll print out the defensive sheet, give it to every player, every infielder that I have, and then I'll sit down with them before the first day of the series, and we will go over not just how to defense them or what their tendencies are, you know, who's going to hit and run, who's going to steal, what to watch out, you know, if they like the safety squeeze, let the corner infielders know, hey, be heads up for the safety squeeze, when they bunt, the counts. So it's just a lot of prep. And a lot of, you know, watching video to get ready for the game.
How do people remember this stuff?
Well, you don't. You digest what you can. But again, I think if you do it individually, you have a better chance to digest it than you do in a group. But let's face it, the other side of this is once the game's going on, mm-hmm. you're still in visual contact. We have our hand signals. You know, we'll still make adjustments. And we also give them the freedom to make adjustments. I mean, look, we got Brandon Crawford, Joe Panic, all these guys. They can read a swing. And you know, sometimes your best laid plans before the game need to be altered because of what you're you're seeing on the field. So I think the biggest thing you want the players to know, more so than the positioning, is you don't want them to get caught off guard. You don't want a guy to get on second base who might try to steal third base and you're not holding them close. You don't want the third baseman back on the grass playing deep, you know, real deep back, and a guy might bunt to get on base. So those are the things that you want to make sure they understand and let their instincts and what they're seeing on the field take over.
Boy, amazing. And you got the A's coming up now for four games. Have you looked at the A's yet?
Not yet, and that's what's time-consuming. I like to try to get started the day before because there's so much information you can look at. And you got to learn to, you know, where do you draw the line? There's only so much you can, and you have so much time. So, you know, I might start taking a look at some of their stuff today. We got a lot of help with this, you know. We have the front office here that enters, you know, gives us all the information we need. But if you want a spray chart for yourself with the information you want on it, like I get from them, the stolen bases, the hit and run guys, you know, what their averages are, everything's on one sheet, so you don't have to flip through the pages to find different things. It's all right in front of you, so it's easier to get, because it's time consuming and tough for the players to remember, but it's tough for you to remember every little detail unless you have it in one place.
Boy, amazing. All right, so that's your day at the ballpark. And then you got to come out and hit some infield and deal with me and the media and everybody else.
Well, you know, that's the fun part of it, obviously, is, you know, you come out, you do all the preparation, then you get to work with your infielders. And we like to get out there early with guys that aren't playing every day, and we'll do something to try to, you know, help them stay sharp. And you go through that, and then you have your regular batting practice where you have 40 minutes for the guys, 45 minutes to hit. And, of course, then my favorite part of the day is coming in to eat. And if Mike Murphy was listening right now, he understands what I'm talking about. You know, he knows I like to eat. So I come in, you get something to eat, then you get ready for the game that starts at 7:15.
And it all starts, as you say, noon, 1 o'clock for 7:15. All right, I'm glad we went through that. Looking at some of the base running, I wanted to check in with you on this thing. We've seen base runners forget how many outs, and it happens in baseball all the time. You know, you see a fly ball to the outfield, and the guy's going back to second base for the third out or something like that. What do you say? Do you say it right away to a player? I saw Roberto Kelly talking to a player the other day about it. And what does the player say? What goes on in a situation like that? How do you forget how many outs there are?
Well, I think that the first thing is there's really nothing to say, because, you know, when it happens, you as the player, and it's happened to all of us, let's face it, it's happened to me in the minor leagues before. You know, you feel about an inch tall because, you know, how can you let this happen? But honestly, as you said, you see it every day, so there's nothing to say. Sometimes you'll talk to the guy the next day, and you know, what were you thinking or whatever. But it's a concentration thing. It's staying in the moment, and you do this every day, every situation. I know it's hard to imagine that you could forget the outs, and you shouldn't. But it happens to more people than you think, just because of the routine that they're in. They do it every day. Their mind, maybe they're thinking about their hitting, or they're thinking about a play. And a lot of times that happens. You're not in the moment on what you're supposed to be doing. And, you know, for the young players out there, it's real important. When you're on offense, you think about the offense. When you're on defense, you think about, you know, have it anticipating the ball being hit to you. And when you're on the bases, think about base running. I mean, that's the key. You know, you can't go to other areas.
All right, very good. That's good concentration. The Cardinals have removed Trevor Rosenthal as the closer, and they're now going to go by Segrist and O, who's a pretty, I like O pretty much, and Broxton is in there as well. And made me think about closers and the mental side of being a closer. It's almost more mental than anything else, because all these guys can throw. But I think sometimes it gets to you, and Rosenthal's out for the time being.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, because he was so good at it for so long. but it does take a special mindset, a short memory to be able to do that. You know, it's a high leverage pressure situation, and you know, it's fine when you're doing well, but when you blow a couple saves, you know, how do you react to that? How do you go back out and still keep your confidence to get people out? And I would imagine, I'm not the best guy to ask about this, because I've never done it. You know, Rags would be a great guy to ask about this, is, you know, when you start losing that confidence, it becomes more difficult to go out there and do your job. And that's the key, learning how to deal with that and deal with the failure and keep the momentum going. And for him, it's really interesting to me because he was so good for so long. Yeah. So why this year? What's going on? Is it, you know, is it his mechanics or something that is not allowing them to have success, and then that just snowballs? But I would have never guessed that, for because of how good as he has been over the years, that he would be out as closer.
Yeah, you see him because they get in trouble, and you can almost read their faces sometimes, you know, because they're not used to being in trouble.
Yeah.
And sometimes they get in trouble, and then things kind of happen after that. So he's out.
He's out. Well, you said they have a good option in O. We saw
him
briefly. He pitched very well against us. And so they have another option,
yeah,
and
so see where that
give the other guy a breather and see what happens. Who knows? Maybe they'll flip it back.
Yeah, oh, they probably will. It just, as I say, it's a mental thing, I think, more than anything. Ron Wotus with us, the bench coach of the Giants. Bruce Bochy's next win will be his 800th as manager of the Giants, and only Dusty Baker and John McGraw have more.
Wow.
Which means this will be your 800th win as the bench coach.
Yeah, I guess that's correct.
And plus, you were the bench. When did you start being the bench coach?
That was in
Felipe.
Year 2000.
Okay.
No, excuse me, 99. I was third base coach in 98 was my first year. In 99, I became the bench coach.
So we're talking, 17, 18 years, whatever.
Yeah, know, going on 18 years as a bench,
bench coach,
one as third base.
All right, so we haven't added up your wins as a bench coach, you know that? get closing in on John McGraw.
Well, I
who
didn't
was
realize that.
He didn't have a bench coach.
A bench coach.
You may have more wins as a bench coach than anybody in Giants franchise history.
Well, I'm going to have to take a look at that because I don't think you get anything for that or nobody acknowledges that. But
we do.
That's interesting. You do, Marty. Yeah, that's good. I'm going to take a look at that. So that's interesting. I never looked at how many wins I've been involved with as a coach.
That's right.
And it would be fun to compare that with the rest of the league.
Well, you could be, there could be a Don Zimmer Award.
There you go.
You know,
yeah.
who is attached permanently to Joe Torre and did a great job with him. And, you know, Ben Stein, we got to add up all the wins of the Giants since 1999. And see how many wins that Ron Wotus has as the bench coach. You may be up there.
Well, I hope so. We've had some great success here. There's no doubt about it. What, 4 World Series, and we've had some very, very good years with Dusty, Felipe, and now Boach. So that'd be a fun number to look at.
I'm saying I'm going to predict I'm going about 1,700.
1,700?
I think about 1,700.
Not that quick with the math, I'll leave it to you. 1,700.
Right. Hey, you look pretty good in the 78 uniforms. How do you like that?
Well, you know, the fun thing about that, we had some fun in the clubhouse with it, really putting those uniforms on and watching Sean Dunston pretend he was a base stealer, like the old guys going about it, was a lot of fun. He was hilarious, Sean, in the dugout. The other thing about those uniforms that was interesting to me is, you know, a lot of these guys, they didn't know how to wear the stirrups. One guy put the stirrups on where the high part is supposed to be on the back. He had the high part in the front. Then, because they're so high, they don't know that when you put your pants on over the stirrups, you're supposed to blouse the pants. You know, you fold them underneath and you blouse them. So guys had no idea. They've never worn anything like that. So it's kind of interesting to see. And it was fun for the coaches to have those uniforms back on.
Now, I think those are going to be auctioned off, if I'm not mistaken. Do you still have it? I don't know.
No. We gave that back. They're probably going to auction that off like they do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, you look pretty good.
Yeah, like a big pumpkin, I guess. Yeah, I don't know if we look good because we laughed at each other in those uniforms, to be honest.
I'll say, you look like coaches. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You know
the big belly.
Yeah,
and,
you looked like coaches. It was funny. I said, "Gee, Woe's been eating a lot."
Exactly.
You look like coaches. Let's put it that way. So it was kind of interesting. Interesting to see it. One last thought for Ron, as I know you've got a lot of work to do, and Alex Pavlovich is in the wings here, getting ready to come on. We had an author on yesterday about home runs, and he had 101 of his favorite home runs. And we actually asked the audience, I thought it was a good question, favorite home run for San Francisco. And we had some interesting guesses on that. And, of course, Brian Johnson's home run came up. Ishikawa's home run came up. Bonds' 756 came up. You have one that comes to mind for you if you think of home runs since you've been here that just all of a sudden you just pops in your mind on any of them?
Well, you know, it's hard not to the thing that pops in your mind right away. There's two situations, obviously. One is any milestone home run with Barry Bonds was a big deal here. I mean, if you remember when we were here and he kept passing all the great players in the game, that is pretty impressive. So, his home runs were at the top of the list. Every night it seemed like there was a different guy that he passed. But, you know, one that's probably one of my all-time favorites was the one in Texas by Edgar Renteria.
That was on the list. Very good.
Yeah, because that's the one that really solidified our first World Series. And, that's special. So, coaching, you can get to the World Series like we did in 2002. Unfortunately, we weren't able to win Game 7 or 6. So that's it. That's at the top of the list.
Yeah, very good. Uribe's homer against Phillies. That someone brought that up.
There's so many.
I know. When you think about it.
It's hard to pick just one. As you said, Ishii's was a great moment. But even if he got a base hit there, we were going to win that game.
Right.
And you think back to Bonds, the excitement and the electricity that this place had when he was doing that. And that was pretty special. That's hard to recapture.
Yeah, beautiful. Hey, have a great day. Good to see you.
Good seeing you, Marty.
Let's see. We'll see you back here. I don't know if we'll see you on a weekend until maybe after the break. Let's see, next weekend down in Arizona. Then I think, are you home? Yeah, we're home, I think, the last weekend before the All-Star game.
Okay. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right, well, thanks so much.
You got it.
All right, that is Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants. Always love it on Sunday morning. And we're going to catch up with him before the All-Star game and find out who he voted for. He's working on his ballot right now. All right, more coming up. KNBR 680, the sports leader.